Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Today on News One Now, Justice Department leaks say Darren Wilson will not be indicted on federal charges in the death of Mike Brown. We'll talk about it with our panel. Congresswoman Terry Sewell, she wants the marchers in Selma to be awarded the Congressional Gold Medal. She'll talk about that right here on the show. Also, the family of Kendrick Johnson, they want a new law that makes it perfectly clear that medical examiners, coroners, need to have the right credentials. And so we'll hear from them as well. Plus, you know, we got some crazy stories right here on What the Hell Thursday. Yeah, it's going to be pretty nuts. Time to bring the funk right now on News One Now on TV One. Folks, the New York Times is reporting that Justice Department lawyers will recommend that no federal civil rights charges be filed against former Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, who shot and killed Michael Brown in August. But optimists say there is a ray of hope since Attorney General Eric Holder will have the final say on the case. It is believed he is going to make the decision on this case before he leaves once Congress decides to confirm Loretta Lynch. Joining me right now to discuss this is Tef Poe. He's the co-founder of Hands Up United, based there in Missouri. Tef, glad to have you here. Also here in D.C., we have Candace Tolliver Burns, principal of the group, Paris Dinar, GOP political strategist, and Michelle Hudgens, communications strategist. All right, folks, I want to go right to Tef Poe first. Tef, what do you make of this report from the New York Times? Did you ever expect Darren Wilson to actually be indicted on federal charges? Tef, you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The signal's choppy. I could just only hear the last portion of the question.
But what do you make of this report saying Darren Wilson would not be charged with a federal crime for the killing of Mike Brown?
You know, most of us here organizing on the ground didn't really have much faith in the DOJ or the federal prosecutors for that much. We've met with them countless times, more times than I can count, more times than I can recall. And each time, they seem to offer us these things that appear to be patch-ups. I believe that in 2015, the Department of Justice is more of a symbolic gesture than an actual gesture to get something done.
Now, the reality is this here. I mean, there's an extremely high standard that has to be met when it comes to federal charges being filed. And so it's very few times that actually happens. And so I think many others are not surprised, again, because of that very high standard.
Correct. Correct. I think that we're dealing with a situation where we have to really observe the system, and we really have to educate ourselves about the system. I don't know if this is something that Black people can continue to rely on. I mean, there's too many spotty moments where, you know, Oscar Grant gets federal charges or Rodney King got federal charges.
Having some issues right now.
We don't know what the universal guidelines for a police officer being slapped with federal violations is.
I want to go to our panel right now. What you have when it comes to the federal case, I mean, there's a legal standard. And that is individuals' rights, they have to be violated by police officers. So, again, I've talked to former federal prosecutors, and so that includes a variety of things. So it's not just as simple as there was an altercation, he was simply shot and killed. There's a very defined federal statute that has to be met.
What? Absolutely. Listen, there is a very high standard, and I think it's what it is the responsibility of the Department of Justice to conduct an objective, exhaustive review of the facts in the Officer Darren Wilson case. And I am confident that under the direction of Attorney General Eric Holder, that exhaustive review has taken place. With that said, whatever decision is announced by DOJ, Tef Poe made a very important point. We really there is a movement now that is very much focused on changing the approach, changing the tools and tactics of community policing in African-American communities. There is a focus now and a push on looking at the systemic challenges when you have police conduct, misconduct, or potential police misconduct in local municipalities. And so we can't just rely on our federal government. Certainly, they're part of the equation, but they're certainly not part of the entire solution. And much of that rests on us, in our backyards, in our neighborhoods.
Paris and Michelle, if you actually think about it, it's likely easier to indict someone on the traditional, if you will, criminal charges as opposed to the federal civil rights charges.
And that's true, Roland, and that's why it makes this whole situation that much more interesting, because I always say it's easy to indict a ham sandwich. And so it goes back to the original point of the frustration of people on the ground, like Tef was saying. They had no confidence in DOJ. They heard this statement out of Trayvon Martin's case that DOJ was going to come in and do something there and failed to do that. And same thing is here. So when you look at the total situation, we have to use this moment to, as a community, educate ourselves and really know what can we do as a citizenry to really know what our rights are and what the government can and cannot do.
Michelle?
I don't think that the DOJ deciding not to press charges against him is in the end of the battle. There are opportunities. They're still studying whether or not the police department as a whole is violating anyone's civil rights. There's still the option of a consent decree, as they have in many states. Where
also a civil lawsuit from the family as well.
There are still options. I'm heartened that the Department of Justice is even looking at this still, that, you know, their attention is put to it, because usually there's a lot more that has to happen before the Department of Justice steps in. So I think we're moving in the right direction. So it may not be this case, but at least it's something that's on the radar.
Jeff, I got to ask you the question. What is being done there in Missouri? Is there any particular state rep or state senate who has taken up the mantle of trying to get the law changed that when a police officer is involved in a fatal shooting or someone dies, that a special prosecutor be appointed? Is that moving in any kind of direction?
There's been talks of it, and people have organized petitions, and we've met with the certain members of the Congressional Black Caucus over the weekend, and we had a few discussions about what that looks like.
I got to ask you, Tef, one second. So this weekend you met with members of the Congressional Black Caucus. What I'm saying is that what I'm speaking of will have to be a change in state law. So
right. Have
there been conversations, and has any state rep or state senator in Missouri said they are going to take this bill to the Missouri legislature?
No, sir. No one has decided to champion that mantle. We've talked to different people, of course, like Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal. She has some things on that she's organizing, but I'm not quite sure if they're organized around that particular piece of legislation. As far as the community, we're using this as a time to actually build community, to educate people about these laws. You know, what does the DOJ do? What are they capable of doing? What does your state senator do? Who is your state senator? Are you capable of running for state senator? Things of that nature.
All right. Then, well, Tef, look, we certainly appreciate it. And, of course, we'll be following this story once DOJ makes a formal announcement. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we come back. We're going to talk more politics with our panel. We'll add Michael Steele to the discussion, the former chairman of the Republican National Committee. Also later in the show, we'll hear from Congresswoman Terry Sewell. She wants the folks in Selma, those who march for voting rights, to be honored with the Congressional Gold Medal. And also, folks, father-son time gone wrong. A man takes his baby with him on a robbery. Oh. You might want to call that quality time. All right, folks, hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at News One or at Roland S. Martin, or go to our News One Facebook page. 8 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, welcome back. News One Now on TV One. Joining our panel, we have Michael Steele. Well, who wrote political strategies? He ain't a political strategist. He's a former chair of the Republican National Committee. That's it. They just threw just
brothers just work whatever you got me to do. I'll
throw
do
a regular title on there. That's
former
y'all. Come on, I need some folks writing to pay attention in there. All right, folks. Of course, we have Candace Tolliver. We have Paris Denard. We have Michelle Hudgens. And all right, let's get right to it. So, Speaker John Boehner has decided that he has issued an invitation for Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to come speak before a joint session of Congress. Now, he ain't tell the White House. This to me, I don't care how you feel. That's disrespect of a president. That a head of state, that you invite a head of state to come address a joint session of Congress, you might want to at least run it by the White House.
Well,
give him a heads up.
Technically, he doesn't have to, but you're right. For purposes of protocol and just the niceties of it all, it's good to give the White House a head up. I mean, the Congress can invite whomever they want to speak before a joint session of Congress. They do not need to get the White House permission. They do not need to inform the State Department. The Speaker can do that on his own. But you make the point that this is the tit for tat. This is in response to some of the comments that the president had made in his State of the Union, the lack of any fleshing out of foreign policy in the State of the Union, what some perceive as slights to Benjamin Netanyahu over the last few weeks. So this is, you know, the tit for tat. It's Washington, you know.
Well, it's Washington, but Washington needs to get called out.
No doubt about that. No, I think that both sides can find accommodation here. And I think you inform the White House, you let the president know, yes, I'm inviting the Prime Minister of Israel to come and speak before a joint session of Congress.
Because here's the other deal. When the Prime Minister of Israel is coming to the United States, you would think that also be a conversation with the president. It shouldn't be.
May or may not be.
My point is it shouldn't be, oh, hey, by the way, Benjamin going to be here in a couple of weeks, so let me know if you're in town to holler at him while you're here.
Well, when you're looking at a matter of, like, state affairs, I think, you know, the Congress has expressed on more than one occasion that the president has overstepped his bounds in not consulting them in regards to Cuba, some of the other situations. So that they would turn around and do the same thing seems a bit ironic, if you will. And I think it goes to not to the point of they're trying to work together, but that they're going to try to dictate. And I don't think that's where we really want to be right now.
Paris, is this not a disrespect of this president?
I wouldn't call it disrespect.
What do you call it?
A very shrewd political move on the part of the Speaker.
How is it not disrespect?
It's not disrespect because they don't have to do it. The president has to actually ask to come to the Congress. So it's very delicate when it talks about who has what power, and they're separate. So they like to use whatever card they can use to one-up each other. And we're going to see a lot more of this posturing with this new majority.
All right. Okay, let me show you disrespect. Okay, Candace, I'm going to invite you to my house for the Christmas party, but I ain't going to invite your husband.
Not happening.
Okay?
Not happening.
That's disrespect.
It is disrespect.
But that's not the same thing.
You're inviting somebody. You at least give somebody a heads up.
Exactly.
You give somebody a heads up.
Exactly.
You give them a shout out.
Like Benjamin Netanyahu, who's married to Barack Obama.
But here's the deal. This is the president of the United States.
Right.
It's a person who's the foreign policy leader, who is the commander in chief. You're inviting a head of state. And I know they are an ally, but they are not an American.
The bigger issue to this, Roland, is the fact that there is strong tensions between Israel and the United States politically. And so it's been seen that there's not a good, positive working relationship.
It's strong tensions between Netanyahu and Obama. Because if you go back and look at the polling data in Israel, President Barack Obama, hugely popular in Israel, and Netanyahu has lots of critics in his own country as it relates to especially him getting involved in the U.S. election with his comments about Mitt Romney last time, which that was a little foul, saying.
Roland, these strong tensions are exactly why
the
Speaker should have consulted with the president and the White House and said, listen, out of respect, out of courtesy of the position, I want to let you know our plans.
But I think, Roland, I think that the point's been made already that the president has not necessarily done the same for the Congress. You're going to open up diplomatic relationships with a foreign government that requires establishing embassies. It requires the Congress's input at some level because that ambassador has got to be approved by the Senate and so forth and so on. And you're finding out, just like everybody else in the country, so this is a two-way street.
There were members of Congress who were aware because this wasn't the first announcement that president made on Cuba. So there were previous announcements. And so I think folks were aware
They were not aware of the extent to which this president was going to move on Cuba.
There were members of Congress involved in a negotiation.
There were. At least two trips, and there were both sides of the party were represented on those trips. So there were discussions.
Again,
was Flake there?
Flake was there.
So the Arizona Senator from
Republican. But this is my point. I hear what you're saying, and again, it goes to what Paris was talking about, and I was saying before about the delicate balance. It's like a ballet. Everyone has a role to play. There are limits to what you say. Even if I'm in the room, I got a representative in the room, right, doesn't necessarily mean I know that I'm aware of what you're going to do next. And
well,
so that's
they not just, the wait staff.
I'm just, come on, you know how this works. And I know you're trying to make the point that this is disrespect for the president. It is not. It is the political back and forth between two branches of government that are trying to find the position they can take one against the other in a situation like this. You diss me on Cuba, all right, then I'm going to invite Netanyahu. This is the way it is. Now, we sit here and go, man, that's the dumbest playground kind of stuff you ever see.
Right.
But this has been going on in Washington since Washington
Absolutely.
Has been here. So this is nothing new. So, you know, I don't feign any surprise. I'm not upset about it. It is the protocol process that they go through, and we have to just deal with it. And you know what? At the end of the day, they'll all talk about it, and Netanyahu will come, and the president may talk to him, and it'll be good.
Well, still call them out, can't go.
Sadly, this isn't what the American people want. This
True.
Is not what they're looking
True.
For. This is not why they elected so many of members of new members of your party
yeah.
to Congress, and it's certainly not what they are expecting from our president, who is engaging with Republicans on both the House and the Senate. Sadly, I think that we're going to see more and more yeah. of this in the months leading into 2016, and basically, it turns Americans off.
Oh, it does.
They don't want the president just to be vetoing everything also. They want him to work with this Congress
and
get something
done. And I would tell the speaker,
go ahead, because I'm pulling up.
I would respectfully tell the speaker, just because someone makes a play that you don't like, that doesn't mean you walk off the field. We're looking for
high-level
leadership.
I'm taking my ball. I'm going home.
This is one of his first moves at this time with this new Congress. Also sets the tone for what is they're trying to do, which is not to make any significant change, which is not to make any priorities.
And the president set the tone when he said he's going to be vetoing a lot. He's going to be very on offense. So he's already set the tone about how he's going to govern.
Paris, I'm reading the Constitution. And it has veto in it.
Right. Ouch. It's also separation of powers as well.
Yeah, but it has the V-E-T-O in it.
Yeah, so what's your
point? It has a four-letter word in it.
So what?
So, okay, he threatened it. He has the power to veto.
Wait a minute.
I'll deal with that when we come back. Hold on. You ain't got a pocket square, so hold on. I'm going to deal with that when we come back.
Twenty after the hour.
This is News 1 Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, welcome back. Michael Steele, I cracked him. I'm not having a pocket square, so I
fixed it.
We took some tissue.
I fixed it.
He grabbed some tissue, but it was a little janky, so I had to go ahead and dress it up.
We got it right.
Look at Paris. Paris got a real one, but that Atlas Square thing ain't doing
classic.
That.
Classic. Classic.
That ain't classic. That's called boring. All right, then. So let's get back. We were talking about the veto. In the State of the Union.
Yeah.
President Barack Obama made it clear, you send certain stuff to me, I'm going to veto it. Now, folks running around all upset, I'm listening to people complaining about it, but here's the reality. The veto is in the Constitution. The president has that right. I'm trying to figure out, what's the big deal?
He has the right to do that, but back to your point, the American people are wanting this Congress and this president to work together to get some things done.
But I thought conservatives love founding fathers and the Constitution and what they established. Is that not in the U.S. Constitution?
Okay, could you stop going around Robin Hood's barn to get someplace? Because, Lord, you're going all over the place.
No, I'm not. I'm going right to the Constitution.
But this had, look, Roland. This has absolutely nothing to do, just because the Constitution says the president has the right to a veto, and we all know he does, right?
And didn't he win both of them?
Doesn't mean that the president goes out and at the beginning of the new Congress states, I'm going to veto it. That is not going to, again, to the point, that is not building a relationship with the new Congress. It is not what the American people wanted after this election. So if you're going to set the tone by waiving your constitutional authority to veto, then that automatically puts people in a position where they're like, all right, fine. We'll just go back to the same old.
Like the president said, didn't I win both of them?
But you know,
is that not what happens when you win? You get the established priorities and you got veto power?
But what he said was, and what I didn't, I heard what you said, but that's not what I heard. What he asked them to do.
Okay, repeat that again. I heard what you said, but that's not what I heard.
I heard what you said. He said, but that's not what I heard. What I heard him say was that, you know, don't just send me blanket bills that you're trying to get, that you're trying to pass through. I'm asking you to legislate. I'm asking you to do the work, to bring responsibility, to bring stuff that's going to help and support the public.
The president doesn't get to tell the Congress what bills they introduce.
But he gets the veto.
Yes, and so send the bill up, whatever it happens to be. And if I don't like it, I'll veto. But this is the point. That is in the inherent in the relationship between the legislative and executive branches. You don't need to go out and project it publicly when, on one hand, you're talking about this new bipartisan era that you want to have happen. And then on the other hand, you say, well, I'm going to put some cold water on it by establishing the fact that I'm going to be prima facie the one who's going to call the shots on what kind of legislation I want you to send out of the Congress.
Bottom line, the president may not be able to hold a hammer over Congress and tell them what bills they should move forward, but the American people do. And when it comes to every issue, value-driven issue that the working middle-class families care about, let's talk about paid maternity leave and sick leave. Let's talk about immigration reform. Let's talk about raising the minimum wage. I don't see any real concrete movement on the Republican side.
Okay.
So the president feels as if, you know what, if you're not going to move something forward, then I've got a finite period of this administration, I'm going to move
forward. And if you move something that I believe is not in the best interest of America, I'm letting y'all know right now, that's I'm right. going to veto.
So when Sandy Hook took place and gun control legislation that the American people wanted was a 90-10 proposition. 9 out of 10 Americans wanted the Congress to do something. Not Democrat, not Republican, nor the White House moved on any legislation.
Why?
So what's your point?
Why? Because they're scared of the NRA.
So no,
because they're wimps.
So this valued proposition that the American people, we're just as much at fault at the dysfunction of this Congress as the Congress itself, because we tolerate it. How? We reelect them. How we continue to give them campaign funds, how we invest in them and prop them up. Oh, that's my congressman. Yours suck, but mine's good. No, they're all in the same kettle of fish. So unless you're going to really take that value proposition as and use it as part of our franchise and act on it, then we're just as complicit as those members are in not getting anything done.
And here's the deal. The reality is here. President Ronald Reagan vetoed the anti-apartheid bill. Congress overrode his veto. So look, if Congress, if you think you got the votes to say, Mr. President, you're threatening a veto, and we have the votes to override you, fine, we're going to do it. Okay, fine. Now that's on you. But I have no issue with the president and the State of the Union making it perfectly clear when it comes to these policies that I disagree with. And again, there is something there when you get elected twice.
And listen. Sure. Listen, former Chairman Steele made a very important empowerment message. I'll link it back to our conversation around Ferguson.
Sure.
It rests with us.
It
rests with us. You want to see a change in the approach to community policing? You want to see a change to the individuals who are your police chiefs, your local prosecutor? You want to see a change in these members of Congress who are doing what they say they're going to do once they get to Washington? Then we've got a few months until 2016.
Look,
we can make it happen.
Look, first of all, I ain't even focused on 2016. We just got to 2015.
Right. Okay, so
The entire state of the union is not about the debate now. The problem is, because we get to 2016, they're going to say, now it's about 2018. In 2018, it's about 2020. I'm talking about today. And to your point, what I'm saying is, I heard all these folks in D.C. Congress not going to do anything that he said. Why can't there be a real discussion and a real debate and an actual vote on paid sick leave, on child care, on community college? Why do we automatically resort to, well, they're not going to do any of that sort of stuff? And I say it's a bunch of broke folks in Republican districts who are sitting there going, and it's a bunch of folks in Democrat districts who say, hold up, now, that child care and that paid sick leave ain't a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I think what we do is we let them off the hook by not forcing them to actually talk about it.
Well,
debate it and vote on it. I agree.
Absolutely. So you had that same passion, I'm sure, when Harry Reid was blocking those 236 bills that left the House last year, in the last Congress, and went to the Senate and were put in the drawer and not even brought to the committee.
Now, first of all, there were votes that were passed. First of all, I also criticized when you had Democrats control the House, and then, of course, you had Republicans who were using the 60-vote threshold in the Senate to also block a ton of those bills as well.
Okay.
So bills that were being voted out of the House.
So we're talking process.
No, no. I understand. No. And what I'm saying is we should be challenging process as well. Mm-hmm. But again, a presidential veto threat, that is not a question of a process. That's a constitutional right. And so it just cracks me up.
But it's how you do it, when you do it, in the context in which you do it, that sets the tone.
So, you don't say I'm going to do it?
No, you don't say. You do say you're going to do it. But the State of the Union is not necessarily the best place to do it. That's all I'm saying.
Everybody in the room together.
Do I send them a tweet?
That's the privilege you get when you're president.
But that's all
you have the bully pulpit.
He doesn't have a relationship with the Congress. He is not known for having positive relationships with this Congress. And so when you want to get things done, you have to work with them. It can be done. Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, Republican and Democrat, got things done.
That's why apples and oranges.
I'm trying to use the Ronald Reagan, Tip O'Neill example.
When,
in that particular time, you had a significant number of moderate Republicans and conservative Democrats in significant numbers and were able to say we're going to make it happen.
Yeah, but they got it to work.
But Roland,
I understand. In the middle of being impeached by the Republican Congress, Bill Clinton still got stuff done with that Congress. So don't hand me this tripe about, there's a difference between this and that.
If this president
and this Congress want to work together, they can. I'm not putting it all on Barack Obama, but I'm not going to sit here and put it all on Republicans either, because Harry Reid is just as much a culprit within the Democratic caucus,
and here's what we have right now. Republicans now control the House, now control the Senate. Let's see what the hell y'all going to do.
Let's
see what they're going to do.
They can do something on free trade.
Let's see how the Democrats block the president on trade.
All I'm saying is, let's see what you're going to do.
This is how clear I am.
But tell my wife, you fix that, I ain't going to eat it. Now, I'm letting you know right now. Now, don't get mad because I gave you a veto threat. Because I have the right to actually say
it. And when your wife fixes it, you eat it.
And guess what? No, that's where you're wrong, sir. That's where you're wrong, because mom and daddy taught me how to cook. That's why if you're a man, cook for yourself. You ain't got to eat. It's the same thing. You can see.
But it's the wrong tone.
Veto
it.
It's all tone.
And as Obama said, I want both of them.
Yeah, you may not eat it.
He didn't say both of them. Both of them.
You may not eat it.
Just letting you know.
It's tone with
and
your
you
wife.
You bring that pocket squad next time you come back here. Now some tissue paper. All right. Michael, Candace, Paris, Michelle, thanks a bunch. Up next, Congresswoman Terry Sewell talking to Selma and congressional gold medal.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, so many people are focused on what happened in Selma in 1965 as a result of the movie directed by Ava DuVernay. But, of course, the folks who were actually involved in that, many of them are still with us. And Congresswoman Terry Sewell, who is from there, she wants them to be recognized by the United States Congress. She joins us right now. And so you have you've already put forth a bill to... award the Congressional Gold Medal?
Yep, a Congressional Gold Medal for the foot soldiers who participated in Bloody Sunday, Turnaround Tuesday, or the final march from Selma to Montgomery. You know there were three marches. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're worthy. There's so many sung and unsung heroes. I think a lot of us know about John Lewis, obviously, and Amelia Boynton, but there's so many that deserve to be recognized. So we're going to get a Congressional Gold Medal. I dropped the bill with the whole Alabama delegation signing on.
Now, of course, the Congressional Gold Medal is the highest award given out by Congress.
Yes.
So you have the Congressional Gold Medal, you have the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Yep, those are the two.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the president gives out his presidential medal, but the highest congressional honor we can give is the Congressional Gold Medal. I think it's long time overdue that Selma, my hometown, gets its proper due as the epicenter of America's voting rights movement. My hope is that people will see the movie and feel renewed, recommitted to the importance of voting. I think you and I both know that we've had a renewed assault on voting. And so I think it's now more important than ever that we talk about the importance of the power of the ballot.
We also, folks always talk about who the president invites to the State of the Union address. Members of Congress also invite their own particular guests as well. And you invited Amelia Boynton. And of course, in this whole dust up between Califano, Joseph Califano, LBJ's former aide, who he tried to give credit to the Selma March to President Johnson. Yeah. Andrew Young was on this show, and he said it was Amelia Boynton who actually went to Dr. King and said, you should come to Selma. And we're running those photos right now of so many folks with her and with you.
Yes. Well, listen, I think that Amelia Boynton, at 103, Roland, for her medical team to okay her to leave Alabama and to come to Washington, I was so honored that she was my special guest. But more importantly, she got an opportunity to meet the president before his speech. And I think the most poignant moment.
That was her first time?
No, that was the second time, actually. You know, he, as a candidate, President Obama came to Selma in 2007 and made his famous speech about the Joshua generation in my home church, Brown Chapel AME Church. So she met him then. But as far as being president, it was the first time she met him as president of the United States. And he leaned over to her as he kissed her on the cheek and he said, you know, I'm making this speech tonight because of you. And she, a tear came down her cheek, and it made all the effort that we had to go through in order to get her to Washington worthwhile.
Now, of course, the 50th anniversary is coming up.
Yes.
The first weekend in March. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be there as well. And the White House announced that the president will actually be there on March 7th as well, speaking at this event.
Yes, I'm so excited that that he's going to be there. I think that this president, more than any other president, should understand the significance of what happened on Bloody Sunday. And the significance of the voters, the marchers, and what they went through. So, you know, for me, having Amelia Boynton, there was a special bond that she and I shared that she reminded me of. She was actually the first woman and the first African-American to run for Congress from the state of Alabama in 1964. Mm. And she ran for the 7th Congressional District. So for me, 40 years later, to have the great honor of having her as my special guest in the State of the Union and to be Alabama's first Black Congresswoman, I know that my journey was only made possible because of her bravery and her courage. So,
what is the process for the Congressional Gold Medal? How long does that take? What is the process it goes through?
So, it has to be over two-thirds of the members of both houses have to sign on to the bill before it can get on the floor. Our goal is to get it passed out of the House as quickly as we can. The Senate...
So two-thirds have to sign on
to the bill as original co-sponsors.
Okay.
So that process begins today for us. We have a whole team of folks trying to get signatures both on the Republican side and the Democratic side. And my two senators from Alabama who are Republican are introducing it on the Senate side. And our goal is to have that bill passed and signed into law before the March 7th, 50th commemoration.
Oh, y'all got some work to do.
We have a lot of work to do, but that's okay. You know, I think that the hard work was done by the marchers, right? And so this is a much easier lift than what they went through. But both of us know that it was the courage and their bravery that really helped us to get where we are today as a nation. And my hope is that people will be recommitted to the ideals that they fought for because old battles have a way of becoming new again.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Congresswoman Sewell, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks.
Folks, and also tomorrow we're going to have the piece with Kendrick Johnson's family. We extended our conversation with our panel, and so I'll push that tomorrow, so we'll have that. We'll hear from Kendrick Johnson's mom, dad, one of the activists there, plus attorney Ben Crump, tomorrow right here on TVE1. All right, folks, Kitty Kaboom and Tony Rez, they're getting ready to bring what the hell? You know, we got some ridiculous, crazy stories that we have to talk about, have a little fun with. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at News1 or at Roland S. Martin, or go to our News1 Facebook page, 16 before the top of the hour. News1 now on TV1.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News1 now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, birthday shout out time. DJ Jazzy Jeff, he turns 50 years old. Also, civil rights leader Benjamin Chavis, he turns 67. On this day in history, in 1949, Dr. James Glatton becomes the first African-American certified orthopedic surgeon. In 1965, 199 Southern colleges agreed to accept the 1964 Civil Rights Act and end discrimination. Colleges complying with the law received federal funding. It's amazing what happens when they withhold the money. All right, folks, it is What the Hell Thursday, where we bring you the absolutely crazy, ridiculous stories from around the world. Today, we are joined by radio personality Kitty Kaboom and radio host Mr. 24/7 himself, Tony Rez. What is Mr. 24/7?
Because I work 24/7, Roland. You know what I'm saying? When you got bad credit and child support, you got to go to work.
Oh, gotcha. I know what in the world is going on. But y'all also got that dark pocket square on that dark jacket.
Oh,
Contrast.
This with the man in the early morning. Contrast.
All right, then. That's
come
right.
For you, so
let me talk
you
about that
not.
Necklace. You might
want
to pipe down.
Oh,
all right, folks,
boo.
You heard of driving while black, but what about driving while eating? Madison Turner was pulled over in Cobb County, Georgia, for eating a quarter pounder while driving. The officer said he had been watching Turner drive while eating the burger for at least 2 miles. He got a ticket for distracted driving. I'm pretty sure he's going to be fighting this one when he goes to court in February. Okay, here's what I'm trying to understand. Y'all had a quarter pounder before, right?
Absolutely.
Once in my lifetime, at least.
That ain't the biggest burger in the world.
No.
How are you eating a quarter pounder over a 2 mile period? I mean, was my man savoring every morsel?
That, I think, should speak to the fact that he was being safe. He took a bite, he put it down, he put both hands on, and he kept it moving. He took a bite, he put it down. I mean, what?
He might got a small radius. He might. Nibbles, you never know.
This is a small thing.
They say you gotta chew your food 100 times.
Trying to stay under the radar.
So it digests properly.
Okay, but see, here's the deal. Okay, so when he goes to court, if I'm the judge, I'm not really asking him a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Who are you asking the questions to?
I'm asking the cop. What the hell are you following behind the man for 2 miles who eating a burger?
Because he clearly states, the police officer said, you can't just drive and eat, bruh.
I mean, like, but what? Was the cop hungry?
He might have wanted a bite. He ain't offering him a bite. He should have pulled over. You want something, too?
I'm just trying to figure out of all the stuff going on.
Yeah, clearly.
I mean, can you imagine he got back to the precinct and they said,
So
for 2 miles?
2 miles.
So
we got people robbing banks.
No.
Sticking up.
Full speeding.
Mm-hmm.
DUI.
Absolutely.
All types of craziness. Right.
You gonna follow
no insurance.
Him.
For two miles.
What are you, a Burger King fan?
Look.
What's the deal?
You can't just eat and drive verbatim. That's what he told the man.
You can't
just eat and drive. What do you think you are?
Have you ever been driving, you've been eating something, and somebody cuts you off and you drop your food? He probably was mad that he had dropped his quarter pounder.
Is that what happened?
Like, you know what? He eating that quarter pounder. I want him. I'm 2 miles.
To me, this is stupid policing.
This is very stupid
policing. So,
but it wouldn't be the first time.
I ain't mad at the dude with the burger, Madison. I'm mad with the idiot cop. That's my
But that wouldn't be the first idiot cop that we done heard
about.
No,
that's right. All right, folks. A 5-year-old gets a bill for missing his friend's birthday party.
Gotta love this.
Alex Nash of Plymouth, England, missed his classmate's ski park party because his parents double-booked him a visit to his grandparents on the same day.
Wow.
The 5-year-old received a $24 bill for, quote, one child's party no-show fee. Wow. Needless to say, his father is not paying. What the hell?
Hello. I love how they tried to put it off. Well, once they were confronted with what the hell, then they tried to backpedal and be like, well, you know, this is a fee that we had to pay with the people at the park, and they had said. So, of course, the parents go to the park, and the park's like, check this out. That's between y'all crazos. We ain't got nothing to do with that.
I'm mad.
No.
Hell is going on in America today.
Put the photo back up, please. Y'all, this is not a handwritten note. They went to Quicken.
Oh, yeah.
They went to their QuickBook. They went to their Excel sheet and
literally got an
invoice. I mean, they decided. I wonder if the invoice was even numbered.
No, they don't need no numbers on
no
invoice. And then put it in the baby backpack, though. Not even man enough to come to the man's house.
Hello.
Like, check this out.
Take this home to your mother.
Please take this home and tell them.
Can you imagine the kid go home, open their backpack, and they go,
nope. He ain't got no friends no more. They said,
daddy. What's an invoice?
Right. What does this mean, Daddy?
What's an invoice?
I'm bad. He ain't got no friends no more. Can't nobody play with him until he pay the invoice.
Oh.
Right.
Cut him off at the playground.
Hold on.
If
I'm that boy, I'm going to school and say, don't nobody play with him.
Till he give up their money.
Don't nobody play with him.
I'm going to need that coinage.
Look, I get it from a parent's standpoint when you have a party and you're asking folks to RSVP. Right.
But would it behoove you to do that prior to?
But it doesn't actually. I'm trying to figure out where is it you ain't show up.
So, all right.
Right.
as a parent, they should have put that in the
in
RSVP.
In the RSVP.
You
let
send that
know.
Out. Look
if
here,
you're not
we
coming,
we got to pay for each child.
It's a coin coming
so
up.
Y'all don't show y'all. Up.
Us black folk,
you know
we're going underbid and then pay for the rest when you get there.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine being invited to a party?
Right, and them telling you ain't coming?
And then somebody
say, we're going to need something to buy
that. All that extra meat, because you said you were coming.
Right.
He had extra liquor.
Right.
All that sort of
all
stuff.
All that. And you ain't show
here's
your face.
Here's a $130 bill.
Where I'm from.
We had to pay the DJ.
You know?
Because you know at Chuck E. Cheese, right? When you go to Chuck E. Cheese, you got to pay a certain amount.
Any restaurant.
Too, right?
But that's an establishment.
So, I'll let you know off the break. Well, we're going to have 15 kids. We're going to have 7.5.
And we'll see how that goes.
Calculate the rest when they get there.
I don't quite understand. That's just me. All right. I'm Roland Martin. Back News 1 Now on TV 1 in just a moment. Send me an invoice. See what happens.
Exactly.
Send me an invoice.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, we're back with Kitty Kaboom and Tony Rez. Here's our other story. A Florida man decided to take his 5-month-old son with him to work. really wasn't work.
Let's be clear.
Like when you get FICO or, you know, you get
time off,
1099.
A lunch hour.
It was a robbery. Corey Matthews, 22 years old, was attempting to break into a house with his friend. Mm-hmm. When they discovered the owner was home, his friend ran off. But Matthews was left behind holding the bag and his baby.
Literally.
He was charged with aggravated assault and child neglect. The child is now with its mother. What the hell?
No.
Y'all raise my hand. What was the preparation for that? What was the preparation for that? You got the diaper bag. Okay, cool. You got the milk.
Check.
He teeming. Go get the teeming ready.
No, you know what? I give him props. Because at least the baby came with him. Do you not remember not too long ago, the woman in Arizona was able to raise over $20,000 that she spent on her damn self.
Oh, but no, got arrested. She raised more than that. It was almost about 70 grand.
70 grand.
Yeah.
So there you go. She done left the baby in a car to go apply for a job. At least this guy is on time with his baby. I'm just saying. Give him props for at least carrying the baby
can
with him.
Can you imagine the description?
He didn't leave him in the car.
Did you see the description? I don't remember, but he had a car seat, though, with a baby in it. He had a baby seat.
They didn't
but
need
you know,
to have a description.
To be perfectly honest with you, I would have played it off.
Yeah?
I would play it off.
Were, and you'd have
Sir,
said it.
To his real deal, okay? I need a babysitter.
I was not able to acquire someone
so
to watch my baby.
I was coming here to see if you were home.
Right.
I was coming to see if you because I really need. I gotta go.
I know I don't know you.
Yeah. That's what I would have done.
Man. Really?
Ain't no plan.
Not having ever met this man before in your life.
He
exactly.
Said,
he got the black scarf on the head.
He yelled to give his friend, you know, warning that the owner was home. I wouldn't have said nothing. I'd have been picking up my baby. Stop crying. Mm-hmm.
No, my favorite part was he put down the baby repeatedly to confront the person with the gun. So he wasn't trying to balance it. You know what I mean?
I don't understand it. No, that's crazy. That's crazy.
No, now, that's completely nuts.
Now,
he got to come with me.
Yeah, no. That's a little special right there.
I think
I'm pulling up
that.
This photo here. Mm-hmm. This woman, Andressa Urach. Y'all see this photo here? She was in those Brazilian bun contests.
Oh, yes.
And she had leg fillings and all kind of stuff.
Yes.
She had to have surgery. Literally, there are holes in her legs.
Her entire leg.
Her butt. She's in a wheelchair and everything.
The whole shebang.
I'm just saying, right now, literally, she had butt injections.
Yeah.
She all the sort of stuff.
All that stuff.
And she said she almost died.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, what in the hell?
That ain't nothing. What? You didn't see the black woman who is literally now has only a torso?
No limbs.
No limbs.
Wow.
Because she wanted to get butt injections.
That's crazy.
It literally
caused what's the price of fame? You hate yourself that much, you go ahead shoot it
but
up.
But she's a damn hairdresser. Price of fame? Where's you going? What red carpet you walking, boy?
I mean, you got to walk.
Now your ass ain't walking nowhere.
Here's my deal. You sitting here, okay, you lose an arm
right.
For a butt injection.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I'm just saying.
So now
saying.
You got no arms and no butt.
Be happy with that butt God gave you. That's your butt.
I mean, never lied.
I'm serious. I don't understand.
I squashed my life away.
Ladies,
and I still ain't
got a man.
It ain't that many squats.
It ain't even that
Face
serious.
North. It ain't that many.
This is what God gave me. I'm going to work with this little teeny donk I got right here.
Girl, that ain't even no donk.
Okay, all right.
So what you gonna call it?
Got your first name Charlie, last name Wilson. R&B legend Mr. Big, folks, will be in the studio. We'll break it down. Talk to Kenya Johnson's family about what they want to do when it comes to getting the law changed. All that tomorrow. News 1 Now. Holla!
So you want the truth? Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now